Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com. The following programming is sponsored by Pinnacle Medical Plus. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Kristen and Andrea show, the Andrea and Kristen show.
Someday we're going to get that.
Yeah, we will. Here on WWDB Talk 860, shout out to Matt Menark, who's our producer.
He's all decked out in his birds gear. Good job, Matt.
I said to him, I wanted to do a meeting tonight, didn't I, Matt? I'm like, let's talk topics, future concepts.
You'll be meeting by yourself, buddy.
No, you'll be there, right? Oh, no, just keep waiting there, right? You know, it's a big night. And I'll tell you who it's a big night for in particular.
Which Kelsey?
Andrea Sasso. She cannot wait. She cannot wait. Obviously, I'm just kidding. But
Joe, I am officially able to be an Eagles fan for the rest of the season because the Giants officially are not even playing football. So these are one of those seasons where I can wholeheartedly get behind my city and the team.
But without breaking your dad's heart.
Right, without breaking my dad's heart or my own.
Right, and here's the thing. You know, it's we always talk a little bit of, you know, what's going on in some current events before we start. We've talked sports and all that. But we do have a great guest, a former power forward for the Boston Celtics, Kevin McHale's. The first question I'm asking him, even though he's with you and Caputo, he's an outstanding attorney, and we're going to have him in here. First thing I'm going to say is, what was it like playing with Larry Bird? You know what I mean?
Well, once a year, we like to bring in a power basketball player, like Ben Simmons was on the show last year.
Ben Simmons was on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We love to talk basketball.
Treats with the Andrea and Kristen show.
Yeah, that's what we do here. And of course, we'll get into some, we're going to showcase, obviously, Kevin's practice and all, but, you know, the Giant, obviously, as I get older, I mean, and, you know, eventually, I know you guys graduated before me in high school, but that's only because I redshirted. I redshirted for like 24 years. But I have much more compassion for people, right? And just in general, because I'm saying things that I'm like now, like, you know, so obviously, it's because I have a nephew that's a big Giants fan. He's from North Jersey and all, man. And I think I told you about him. Shout out to Joey Santiago. He once burned his Giants stuff up after the Eagles beat them on Facebook. And he had to go buy it again. But
poor Joey.
I mean, it's just thank God that we have those four Super Bowl rings. We have those years to remember. I don't know how old your nephew is, but I remember all four. They were very... If it wasn't for those, I wouldn't be able to tread through
these
times.
I'll tell you what. I wish I could get him on the line because this is what he said. You know, his birthday was the miracle in the Meadowlands, too. He was at the game when DeSean Jackson took that punt return back, right? And so, you know, but he said before the Super Bowl that we won, he said, I don't want you to win the Super Bowl. Because I just don't want you to be able to say you have one. What a cruel dude.
What a creep.
Well, he doesn't live here.
Yeah.
That's how I used to be before I really...
Joey, that's so
No,
rude.
He does live here.
Oh, he does live here now?
He's in South Jersey. By the way,
how does that even happen?
I know. Well,
wait, did he grow up here?
No.
He grew up in
Central Jersey or North Jersey, near New York. And by the way, he's a Marine and all that. So he's everything about him, except one little
is
thing.
Honorable, is, except for that.
Right. But he's...
How rude, Joey.
He's married to my niece, Lauren, and she is a diehard Eagles fan, and she's not one to back down. And
good
I
job.
Would, I
good
just
job,
wouldn't
Lauren.
Want to tick this dude off, man. You know, yet they're you know, she's got the Eagles stuff on. And
sometimes it's better in a relationship to have two people that are not scared of conflict and yelling at each other. It's sometimes a better fit that way. I've learned.
In my relationship, I don't have that. One of us is afraid of the other one. And
well,
it ain't
we
my
know
wife.
Who that is. Shout out to Elaine.
Thank
way
you.
To go.
Thank you. but, you know, so it's definitely, but tonight is a big night. I love the Kelce brothers. I mean, I just, you know,
Jason Kelce is my absolute favorite human. I love him.
Guess what? He, to me, is, you know, when you look at all the great, you know, if I was to look in Philadelphia, okay.
The sexiest men alive in Philadelphia.
I find him to be very sexy.
I agree. And I know that's where Joe was going with
that's
that.
That's all different. That's right. He is smoking. But what I was going to say is he just understands the city better than everybody.
Yeah.
And you look at the great in this. And look, Angie.
It's like him and Bryce Harper. Just get
well,
it.
Well, you look at Harper. You look at obviously, you know, Jason Kelce, but, you know, Brian Dawkins.
Oh, B-Dawk.
Guys that understand this city.
Yeah.
Like there's no tomorrow.
They jump not, right in.
I saw, they were talking. Here's a funny story about, I saw on Reels, on the Kelce brothers, their podcast.
New Heights,
and they had Andy Reid on, and Andy Reid told the story about once he got the job in Philly, Bill Parcells said to him when he was with the Jets, he said, "Oh, by the way, you're in the toughest market," and this was before he started, you know, Andy Reid started this coaching, and he goes, "Man, if Bill Parcells says it's crazy here, you know, and it's difficult to coach here," yeah. And he's in New York,
showing up every day for the Jets.
Yeah, that's right. by the way, you know, he was incredible. Kevin McHale just walked in. First
Hi,
question,
Kevin.
First question: what was it like playing with Larry Bird? But you get that on occasion.
Once in a while, I've heard it before.
You look awful young, by the way, and shorter than I thought, even though you're way taller than me. Let me just introduce you to our listeners. Want to bring into the broadcast Kevin McHale, who was an associate with Human and Caputo here in Philadelphia. Medical malpractice?
Yes. Catastrophic injury, all types, but probably specialty in med mal for sure.
Awesome. Well, it's great to have you on the Kristen and Andrew show. Obviously, you know, we do a lot of legal radio. You didn't get enough information, so we had one of your, I think, you, Human or Caputo on over at Banks Law, because you're right next to them. Okay, and they were on, and I was trying to get in touch with one of them to say, tell this guy to back away slowly. He's never going to... Have you ever... But we have a little
this
bit of fun.
This poor guy, we're scaring him already.
At least pack Excedrin for the hour with the Andrew and Kristen show.
Yes, at the very least.
We talk law.
We have zero fun here at the show.
Yeah,
what are you
tell.
Doing smiling, Kevin? What is he doing? Quick question for you. We talk a little. We have a little fun, and then we get into everything. But are you a sports fan?
Big time.
Okay. This is crucial,
Kevin. This is the most important question.
Here, this is how I got to do it. What are you doing tonight about 8 o'clock?
I'm going to be watching TV with my dad. We got the Eagles game on.
Yes! Now, let me say this. You might think, and you're in the majority here, but you are not unanimous in this room right now.
Well, you didn't even ask if he was a Kansas City fan or an Eagles fan.
I'm taking a shot at this one.
We've had tickets since the 60s or the 50s in my family.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's amazing.
So, yeah, so we're big Chiefs fans.
Yeah. Are you?
No. Oh. No, I grew up going to games at the Vet. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was my first game, too, at the Vet.
And as a man of the law, you'll appreciate, obviously, we had Judge McCaffrey at the Vet, where you know,
oh, yeah.
Forgot, you know, we so it was it could have been court law, court TV after the. I went to a game at the Vet. I took my son and his nephew, and they were both like 11. It was now. Look, I'm from Philly. I'm an iron worker, so I could probably run into 80 different people in there, right? Like we're all. But as an iron worker, even I was offended. It was nuts. I bought a ticket. I'm in a 700 level. And so I could have wrote a book on it. So my son is in a 700 level with his cousin. I'm over like a section. I had to get a ticket where I could, but it was kind of cool.
You got a ticket by yourself?
Yeah.
You sat by yourself?
Yeah. And so I'm there, and this is what the crazy. So we're playing the Rams. It was the year the Rams won the Super Bowl. Oh. Okay. And Dick Vermeil was their coach. No one, we don't hate the Rams. And I mean, in other words, no one really cared. We don't have great opinions on, or either way on the Rams, right? But, I'm walking up with the kids to, I'm walking along Patterson Avenue, and immediately there was a young kid with his parents wearing Rams stuff. Everybody on the, who was tailgating got up and was like, coming to this kid. You know, I'm like, whoa, man. Come on, fellas. Anyway, and girls, because it wasn't just the guys. I got to the game. I'll never forget the insanity. It started off. So I am in the fifth row by the walkway, okay, and I'm in the 700 level. There's a walkway there. The 600 level used to have, it was right on the balcony. It was only like 5-10 rows, right? It was short. These two idiots, I'm not kidding you. These are grown, got to be in their 20s. No, obviously in their 20s.
Eagles fans.
Of course.
Yeah.
And they have soft pretzels. And there's a father and a son in Ram stuff, right? And they're ripping the pretzel off. Now, they are only 15 feet from these people.
Don't tell me they wasted a good pretzel.
Yeah, it's a good. So they're throwing it at the guy, right? He gets up, comes up. I see them pointing. It was cold and it was windy, so I couldn't hear exactly what they were saying, right? But you could say it was like, come on, man, what are you, nuts? You see the two guys go, okay, no problem. Guy jumps down, goes over to, he's on the other side of the walkway in the 600 level, and they agreed. It must have been a gentleman's agreement. He didn't hit his seat yet. And they started throwing it again, right? So I'm like, this is crazy, right? So about 5 minutes, goes by. A guy starts walking up, and the 700 level went way up. This drunk dude walks by me. He is, absolutely ossified, and he loses his balance and falls, and he's got a big beer, right? And he falls right on this old lady, right next on the other side of the aisle. And then just about that time, I'm sitting there, and I was, I forget if we won. I think we did win the game, but all of a sudden, a missile flies over my head from up top. No, now these guys are in front of me, and it smacks this guy in his face who was sitting in the last row at a 600 level, and man, it hit him like a ton of bricks. What? And I look at him, and I see him reach down. And it's a Snickers bar that's in a wrapper, right? And, half.
Now so, I'm really offended.
Okay.
Now who wastes a Snickers bar?
I know. Anyway, he looks up. There's a million people up there. He can't see it. And the two Beavis and Butthead dudes in front of me that started to laugh. He couldn't. It was like poetic justice. He looks up, can't find anybody. Looks
so
at them two.
He looks at them and just.
And he looks at them two and he goes, you think it's funny, right? This wasn't the guy they were throwing a pretzel at. And he attacked them and a riot ensued. This is all within like 10 minutes.
I mean, this sounds very much on brand.
Oh, I forgot.
This is why Sunday afternoon deserve at the vet. Courthouse in the basement.
Oh, yeah, well,
they did.
Here's the deal. There were no consequences to this game. I don't even think we were in the playoffs, and it was the Rams, and we played them last game.
And
the game meant nothing.
Who cares, right?
Here's another
that
one.
Poor kid.
Here's the last thing about that game. Right before the game started, a family, sitting in the 600 level, and they're Rams fans, and they come up. They must have came to Philly, right, from St. Louis, and you're having fun. The father seemed nice enough. Takes his jacket off, looks up at everybody and goes, yeah, like he's into Rams. They had to move those folks before the end of the first quarter. Yeah, when we start losing.
And to move those guys.
Yeah. So as lawyers, by the way, I'm sure there's all kinds of lawsuits. Just, I don't know about Med-Mal, but there's some personal injury stuff going on.
Well, there is, but there's actually, it's interesting. I had to read a couple of cases recently on this type of law. And there are protections. It's basically like you take a risk when you go to a sporting event. So there's certain things. I mean, yes, there are still active cases, but in certain situations, just like that one, you have to kind of anticipate.
Okay, that's a great point you make, all right?
For example, like in the bathroom, if something happens in the bathroom, well, they're not supposed to
be watching you in the
bathroom. They're not supposed to be, like, providing security in the bathroom. It's very interesting.
So it's interesting you say that because this is going to throw you for a little bit of a loop. Right? I owned a nightclub for 15 years in the city.
Kevin's very young. Kevin was probably your first customer.
Yes. No, he was only three when we opened.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, not even.
Was he bored?
I'll just explain to you. I'll explain. No, but this, I asked my lawyer this question. I love the way with the law, we get to pick and choose. Like, there's limits in the city of Philadelphia. So you can sue us, but I made a determination that you can only sue us for this much. There's certain situations like that, like the one you're talking about. So you come into a nightclub, okay? You're taking some sort of risk, right? If you went over to the place where they had that bowl, you had to sign a disclosure. You know, you what do they call those?
A waiver?
Yeah, a waiver, because if you're a mechanical bull, you jump on it.
Oh, the bull. Yeah. I was like, what's a bull? What are you saying?
A bull.
A mechanical bull. Did you have a bull at your
club? I didn't,
club?
But Johnny Utah's did. It used to be Tiki Bob's, right?
I guest bartended there one time. Right. It was a nightmare.
I saw it on CNN. You started all kinds of trouble. But
I have an aunt that was dancing on the tables.
So I definitely...
Okay.
Only when it was Tiki Bob's.
Let's give her a shout out. Let's make her famous. But here's the thing. So I was at a deposition because, you know, we've had defense attorneys on the shows, and I was on the defense side when I was getting sued by my nightclub, right? So I once said to my attorney as we were sitting down, can't we do a disclaimer? You come in here, obviously.
It doesn't work.
And he said, no. Oh, you know, I'm like, this is my guy representing me. He goes, no. Well, you can over Tiki Bob's, and obviously at the vet at Vet Stadium you could or something like this. But the little guy, here I am, right?
Joe gets very salty when we talk about.
Okay, well, and for those listening, the little guy probably has a big boy insurance policy. It's not coming out of your wallet, and if you have the luxury of making a lot of money off selling liquor. And do you make money selling hot dogs or selling liquor at your club?
Hold on for 1 second. My wife used to take that money, so I didn't have any of that money.
Right, so then this is a different, I'm being
way
more
to go,
general.
Lean.
No, I'm just saying.
You're getting so much airtime tonight.
You know, that's the issue. When you're serving liquor and you are assuming the risk of serving liquor and people's behavior because you decided to run a business wasn't, you know, a high tea and sandwich in an afternoon establishment.
It was. If you got in late, you might not get in till the noon the next day. You could go get some tea and some... But now you're getting into dram shop. And I'm sure the firm has done dram shop. So you would talk about, because I've testified in all kinds of cases, imagine some of them were in front of the liquor control board, you know... what happens if so-and-so on behalf of her friends goes up and gets a bunch of drinks and the individual behind that she's getting them for visibly intoxicated, but it's a crowded thing and the invisibly intoxicated individual does not go up. They send their friend up.
So you're not the training in the the tips training or the ramp training.
Wait a second. You don't know anything about that. You don't know that you're just making this up now. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You're right. I was a server. I was trained in all of these things, and I do a lot of work in this area. And unfortunately, again, it's a privilege to serve alcohol.
I know.
And you have to train your staff to, if you are going to give a drink to one person for somebody else, you have to make those observations. However, us lawyers, we're not looking for trouble. If there's somebody that's falling off a bar stool and then they're handed a drink, that's really the only time there's a case. You know what I mean? It has to be like that. And your bartenders, if they didn't notice that, they're not doing a good job.
And the funny thing is, and I totally agree with that, and the real reality is there's a lot of ways to secure that. If my security, they were trained. If somebody fell out that door, they weren't getting in their car. You were not. In other words, everybody's sitting there.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's a difficult business. And, you know, but
it
I...
It is difficult. It puts you in, you know...
Yeah,
Clubs are where lots of things happen when alcohol is being served.
I wrote down and nothing good happens after 2 o'clock in the morning with alcohol.
Nothing good happens
music.
After midnight.
Yeah, I mean, well,
now you're showing your age.
Yeah, well, I don't. Yeah, listen, trust me when I tell you. Let's do this. Although I could write that book 7 or 8 times about all the crazy things that happened. Okay, so let's get in. Let's have some fun. But you know. Some organized fun. So, Kev, has anybody ever obviously mentioned Kevin McHale? You know, I was thinking 6'11", about 65 years old, and in the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, nice big bank account too, I'm sure. If I had that, it would not be working.
Woo, we know who's buying lunch today. We saw the picture though. We knew you were the lawyer, Kevin McHale. Yeah. So talk about the firm and a little bit about yourself.
Human and Caputo is where I work. We are a relatively small firm. I don't know if startup's the right word, but I think in this day and age it might be. The founding partners, Andy Human and Dave Caputo, spun off from Klein & Spector maybe 5 or 6 years ago or so. So up to about 6 or 7 lawyers now.
Well, that's great.
We do catastrophic injury work. Dave and John Crutchlow, who's a recent partner addition, who's great, from the DOJ and the SEC, do whistleblower work.
Yep.
I do not do much really, if any, of the whistleblower work. I do more of the catastrophic injury work, medical malpractice primarily, but we've also had our fair share of, you know, we had a really big car accident case recently. So depending on the type of injury and the type of event, we'll take a look at it. I grew up not wanting to do anything with medicine or science or anything like that.
Same. I hate math. I guess I have to be a lawyer.
Right? My brother's a doctor and my sister is a nurse, so I figured I'd go to law school and avoid all of that.
Yeah, now you need to know. You're probably calling your brother all time. Listen, man, I need to know that.
For sure.
Knowing the medicine's a big part of what you do, right?
Yeah, so the first thing he says is you're mispronouncing the word.
That's good that you have. I need somebody to help me with that.
I need a soundboard, yeah. Right?
So second is he just says Google it.
What kind of doctor is he?
He's a pediatrician.
That's really nice.
Yeah, so he's loving that. But
where are you from? What area?
Westchester. I grew up.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm actually out in Havertown now. So I was born in Havertown, moved to Westchester, grew up there. St. Joe's Prep guy.
Oh, all right,
this show is over.
We have a prep guy at the office.
It didn't work out. But you know what happens? What happens typically with St. Joe's Prep is whoever can't get into Roman Catholic, you know, especially where I coached football 8 years and went, they
poor
go to
Kevin.
Prep, they go to LaSalle, they go to...
Poor Kevin, he didn't know. Walked into the lion's den with us.
It's funny though. I just did I'm gonna date myself massively right now. When I was a senior in high school, Richie Gannon was a junior.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. And man, what a great athlete. He was a huge fan of him when he hit the NFL and all that. But I said, I did the A Spark in the Dream show last week, and Karen O'Donnell was the professional on the program.
Oh.
And it was the kids from Roman Catholic High School, and their athletic director came in. And I coached there for a long time, and I kind of joke around. I'm like, fellas, isn't it difficult to watch the Eagles and have DeAndre? I said, I've said during the game 100 times, man, I'll cheer for St. Joe's Prep if this dude is, because the dude is really good. I called my buddy. I'm like, you imagine how much recruiting they're getting right now?
Yeah.
But I'll take it. Prep is a great school. It's an excellent school.
OZ, too, is a prep guy.
Yeah, no, I got you.
Yeah, so we're it's a lot easier to watch the Eagles now.
Yeah.
In the form, I got, you know, a special rooting interest.
Aw.
Yeah, so it's been awesome. Fun. And they introduce them all, you know, coming back home from St. Joe's Prep.
I know.
So it's fun at the stadiums.
It really is. And it's, by the way, I didn't, except for last year, Game 1, last year when Swift ran all over the Eagles, we won. Right before Detroit kind of, you know, went downhill, they had a couple tough losses, and then went, he ran all over us like we were a high school team. It is so good. There's just something about that, dude. And then I call all my guys from Roman, and I'm like, because I never seen the kid play, and they were like, oh, he's just at a different level. And you don't want to tick him off because you ever see his dad? The guy is bench presses like a car. I know.
That's a big guy.
He is a big guy. And then after prep?
I went to Penn. So stayed in the city. I was a rower there. So
Row crew.
In high school and college.
Actually, my cousins row crew at prep. One just went to Harvard. Shout out to Owen. And Patrick, he's rowing. I think he's in his senior year right now.
That's awesome. Yeah, the program's really flying high right now. So
yeah, they're very, very good. Yeah. They went to Italy for a regatta somewhere. I don't know what it's called.
So
probably Henley.
Oh, yeah.
So we went over there.
See,
when I was
that's how much I know.
When I was in high school, we went over there too. That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You got to wear, you know, the fancy suits, and, you know, the women wear the big hats, and,
so
you know.
Cool. It was, was that Lake Como?
It was on the Thames. okay. in London.
Okay. I think that my cousin, it was...
Oh, he might have been in like junior nationals then or going for the national team. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very cool.
So I just...
That's awesome that you got that experience so early. That's
amazing. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
So I just did a show a couple weeks ago with one of my clients, and the guest on the show was an immigration attorney. And her name was Renee Heichel-Cuddy. She's an Olympian.
Oh.
And she was awesome. She did not...
I'm just thinking about going to the Olympics and then having to sit in a room with you to talk about being a lawyer.
How was that?
No offense, but...
We had fun. First thing she said is, well, what do you want to talk about? We didn't talk about the Olympics. I said, I'd like to talk about rowing.
I had like a physical reaction to that.
That's amazing.
By the way, they came in 10th and she was fantastic. And she was really funny. But of course, one of the issues that I have with you rowers is that I live in East Falls.
Yeah.
I live in East Falls.
Oh, the traffic.
I got to drive down to East Falls. I grew up in East River Drive. And I'm like, it's a regatta. It's always one of
It is the worst.
And they reroute you up North Philly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the first nice day of the spring. You wake up, you're happy. I'm going to take a ride down to the city. And then you are in the car for 45 minutes.
Yeah, any kids? Almost a year. No kids.
No kids? Okay. So I'm sure, you know, on occasion, you and the wife go watch the regattas and stuff like that. I'm going to be thinking about you the next time. I'm getting your cell phone after this show. I'm like, listen, get me through this traffic right now.
I like that idea.
Yes, we need somebody.
It's great tradition.
It's always great to have a guy.
This guy's going to know.
I got a guy.
He'll answer the first time, but I won't have a guy after that.
Not after today.
Exactly.
Wait, we didn't even get to his law school career.
We are.
Sorry.
By the way, you went to Penn? I worked at Penn. As an iron worker, I don't know how we miss paths.
Especially down at the river, too, at East Falls. You'd think we would have crossed paths once.
That's right.
100%.
Like this.
I don't know how I missed you.
Hit me again. and law school.
Yeah, Villanova for law school. So I met my wife there.
Oh,
and I met my boss there.
Oh.
Yeah, so a friend of mine who I worked with.
In a sense, you met both at the same time, he met his wife and his boss. Go ahead.
Clever, Joe.
That was very good, Joe. It was very good. Shout out to your wife.
Yeah, we worked on that beforehand. I set him up.
You paid him to say that.
Yeah.
Exactly. The writers of this show are just...
Bada-bing.
The writers of the show are just... Great.
No. Hold on. The writers are on strike, yeah. Obviously. It's just
obviously.
Us.
These poor listeners.
Villanova Law?
Yeah. A friend of mine was working for Andy at the time and said, hey, I think you'd really like this guy. I'd take his class. He taught depositions, and it was my second or third year. I don't remember. And loved him, loved his teaching style. And I was like, man, I'd love to work for this guy one day. And kind of just worked out. I went to a defense firm for 2 years and learned the ropes and got some great experience. And, you know, the paths kind of lined up with Andy and Dave, and that was that.
That's great.
Yeah.
Did you have an idea of what area of the law you wanted to get? I mean, I'm sure it was personal injury.
Yeah. So, you know, when I started, I said anything but medical malpractice.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
How life does
I said
that
anything
you.
But trial work. I don't think I can handle it.
Same.
You know, stupid things like
Same,
that. And then you just start going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I got put in the malpractice group at Marshall Dennehy and, you know, fell in love with it. And that was that.
So I had somebody on the broadcast recently that started off at the DA's office. And I said to the individual, I said, well, you know, talk about your career path. And they did. And I said, well, what made you switch? He said, well, those college loans were coming. And we had it, you know, but yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's just fate. Sometimes it's like you said, you met your current boss in law school. And sometimes, like, that's what happened with me. I needed an internship. I was a law clerk at a small plaintiffs and claimants, workers' comp attorney firm, and that's how it happened. Like, that's how I got into personal injury. And
it's going to be the majority of how a lot of people, you know, they start off.
Oh, I started off on the defense side, and that was it for me. I knew I was a plaintiff's lawyer after a couple of years of that. That's where I found my spark on the
Same.
Defense side, just
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
just I did trying to find things that were wrong with the case and why we shouldn't pay this person that's injured, and it just... it propelled me into my passion that I am here with today, Joe.
Yeah, no, I get it.
That was it.
I always say I did defense work for a minute, for about, what was it,
a one
blip, year?
One year.
But having that perspective, by the way, with your clients is always—
It's great.
You know, you know,
it definitely helps.
Yeah, you know, you've been there, you know what they're, you know.
You know what they're looking for, right. You know what the strategies are going to be. You also, I think it's interesting, sorry everyone, I don't really have a voice today. I think it's interesting that you kind of, you learn how the insurance companies interact with their attorneys.
Oh, yeah.
And so you have more patience for opposing counsel, in my opinion, when you know the ins and outs. Or you lose your patience, right? Because you're like, I know what you know. I know what you have. I know how this works. Don't fool me. You know, you can't fool me. But it's good.
Yeah. And just knowing how, you know, even something as simple as, we're taking a deposition. Well, after that deposition, they're going to draft a 2-page letter, and here's everything that they're going to be looking for, and here's all the information their client's going to get within, you know, a day of this deposition. So let's make sure we're polished up on A, B, and C, because this is what they're really looking for.
Yeah, your clients are very lucky. I mean, coming from a place like Marshall Dennehy, they definitely know what they're doing, you know.
Yeah.
You had great exposure, I'm sure.
Yeah, and really good people there. It was tough to leave, you know, but...
How long were you there?
A little under 2 years. So enough to kind of get in there and kind of do everything I felt like I needed to do to move over. I figured I'd get one shot at this, so I'm not going to make a move unless I feel like I'm totally ready. And, you know, it wouldn't be fair to me or to whoever, you know, chooses to take me on. So I felt like I was ready. And
When did you run back in Andy?
We kind of just stayed in touch. I graduated in 2019. So, I mean, 3 or 4 months after I graduated was the pandemic. So... A lot of my law practice, I was teaching myself.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I spent a lot of nights, you know, reading just briefs and motions and transcripts, trying to learn how to do stuff.
Who do you work with at the firm typically on MedMal?
It's a split. So every case has either Andy or Dave on it. So I'm probably close to 50-50 now. And they both have different styles. I learned so much from each of them. So I kind of try and integrate that, but still doing a lot of, you know, on my own, just, you know, weird stuff like reading, you know, different books about, you know, personality types and even depositions and stuff, like trying to just do everything I can to speed up this learning curve.
Well, it's interesting though, because, you know, obviously both firms, you know, how many firms in a lot of ways advertise MedMal and don't really do it. They're just, they're doing it for the referrals.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And that happens. And so...
It's wild.
You know, typically speaking, I can't tell you how many... Yo, Matt. He's
Kevin
in the little chair.
You know what it is? The fan chair.
You know, I stuck my leg up to try and
Yeah, that's right.
I wish there was a camera. Who's the property owner?
I'm so happy there's not. Yeah, right?
Who made this chair?
My back hurts.
I believe it's defective.
Well, okay, just to give a visual to everybody, his seat just slowly went.
It didn't. When you accidentally hit the bar right there, that's what it does. It's not the seat. Sometimes you hit it. You're right. Exactly. By the way, how tall are you?
I'm about 6'4".
Yeah, I don't really like you. Listen, you're going to sit down there.
Like that tall.
Hold on. You're going to sit down there. You're going to look up for me, up to me for the next 20 minutes.
Wait,
Kevin, you just got a shout out. My cousin Maureen used to work with you at Marshall Dennehy. She says hello.
Oh, no way. She just
texted me. She was like, oh, my God, I love Kevin. So she says hi.
So I say hi.
Okay.
So where the heck was I going?
I don't know, because this chair
just totally derailed the whole prank.
I know. We were talking about how people advertise that they do medical malpractice and they really don't. And I think that that's important for us to not forget because the listeners need to remember that a lot of times people will advertise that they're just going to refer the case to our firm, Kevin's firm.
Well, that's where I was going.
And they just want the referral fee.
So I've had shows with individuals like that. And the first, I'll say to them, where do you want to go? And the first thing they'll say is, I don't want to go to medical malpractice. I'm like, that's where we're going.
Oh my gosh, that's so mean.
There's firms that are you know, regularly practice. We have a doctor lawyer on staff, and it's like the hardest kind of work to do, but it's also the easiest because I don't have to break anybody's heart if it's not a case. I don't have to give them a conclusion. They give me the records. I say, hey, that sounds messed up to me, but let me get the doctor to read it.
Right. The cases have to be certified, right?
Yeah. So we can't file a lawsuit unless we have a letter from an expert. So a doctor, usually in a similarly situated profession. So if it's, you know, an emergency med doc that's accused of the negligence, we need an emergency medicine doc to look at the records and sign off and say, hey, I think there was negligence here. So even if there's a really bad injury, sometimes it wasn't the result of negligence. So, you know, it's really important to work up the cases pre-suit to save ourselves, you know, a lot of time and money. And same for the client on the back end. You don't want to go through 2 or 3 years of, you know, a lawsuit just to find out at the end that there was nothing. So it's an important process up front.
Yeah, and that vetting process, you know, sometimes we, as members of the general public, how many times have we all diagnosed ourselves as, oh, I got a med mal case, right?
Right.
I had a guy, and by the way, I got the call last week and it worked out. Thank God for my brother-in-law called me a couple years ago. This guy lost his leg and couldn't get, and he had his doctor, some kind of stent he put on backwards, and it screwed something up, but he lost his leg and still could not get a personal injury firm to jump on. Now, finally, I approached a couple. One of them didn't take it. The other one did. And they settled last week.
Oh, great.
And so I was happy for him.
That's great. Well, sometimes if it's something that happens, is it a complication, an acceptable complication of the surgery that happens regularly, then it's not going to be a case. Or if it's something that, even if that thing happened that was wrong, they put it in backwards, that might not be the actual cause, or there's a problem proving that that was the actual cause, that he lost the leg.
So
then you have no case. I mean, I review a case a week. I've signed 2 out of 50.
Yeah.
It's very hard. It's very selective. Or sometimes they don't lose their leg. They've just had to have a follow-up surgery, and their case is worth $100,000. But it's going to cost us $50 to pay the doctors, and then you're going to pay me. So then how is it worth it to the client to get $300 at the end of all of that?
Do you know what I mean? It's a hard conversation to have with a client, too. It's like, listen, it's a business decision. You know, it's just not a right fit. I've actually personally had a very good experience with Kevin recently with a client that we were both reviewing.
Okay. Oh, I just wanted to know where you were going with that.
Joe.
That's the other show. It's on late at night, but that's not important right now. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
And he was very professional and great with, it was an old client of mine, and he did a great job in reviewing it and vetting it out and whatnot and communicating with the client. And I was very, very happy.
Thank you.
With that.
It's so interesting that you're on this path and what you just said, because what our injury program with, I had all the unions, but an ironworkers union representative called me up years ago, and he said, we have somebody that's injured. They got injured on the job, whatever. They have some kind of issue with their elbow. He got surgery. He's getting workers' comp, but had an issue with something going on in his elbow. He could not get. He swore that the doctor who and it was a big doctor at one of the big institutions, didn't do the surgery, that one of his associates did it. So when he was going up, he was in the elevator. But then, anyway, all kinds of, finally, I got an attorney who we did radio with to say exactly what you just said. He's got it. And no one would tell him why. And being honest with him, and finally said, listen, there might be a case here. But the problem is, it's, you know, first of all, he understood just from looking at it. And he said that it's not going to be worth a client going through 3 to 4 years worth of craziness for a settlement that we, you know, 10,000, you know, it's just not worth it. When you're vetting cases, you really, there's so much you might even put money into vetting a case. Talk about that process.
Yeah. So everything starts with just the first phone call, whether it comes, you know, from, you know, referral firm like you guys, or it comes from an old client, or, you know, we can get cases from anywhere. And we have, I typically try and at least call the client myself and just introduce myself and say, this is what the process looks like. You know, I'm Kevin, I'm going to be the attorney handling your case. It's nice to meet you. I try and get just a quick story. And then we have a great team of paralegals that do our intakes. We have one nurse paralegal who's excellent. And she and I work together a lot. And she gets, you know, all the medicine down for me. And she does everything I need, so that when she says, hey, Kev, here's the intake, I know exactly what I have. I review it. I call the client back. And then at that point, it's either, hey, based on what I'm seeing here, I'm just not seeing a case, based on there's likely no negligence or likely no damages, or this is something that we want to sign up and investigate. And then we'll order the records, you know, and that costs money to order the medical records. And Assuming that after, you know, I look through the records, again, I'll either say, well, this looks like it's something based on X, Y, and Z, or nah, I don't think so. I looked at the records and there's an easy explanation for this. If we think it's a case, then we call an expert. And they then charge us hourly. They are not cheap. They're very good at what they do, but they're not cheap. So then, you know, hopefully at the end of that process, you know, and we're pretty selective about the cases we kick over to the experts just because you don't want to be.
You have to be.
Yeah, you don't want to be paying thousands of dollars to get rejection letters all the time.
And that, by the way, that sort of contingency fee agreement, right?
Yeah.
That's in other words, you're going, if you're even considering taking it to that point, you're investing money in it, but that does not come out of the client's pocket, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So we lay out all the costs up front. So if you sign up with us, you do not pay anything until the very end. So we outlay all the costs for the experts, the records, you know, court filings, deposition transcripts, all that stuff. You know, and it's stuff that comes back out at the end. But if, you know, we go to trial and lose, we're out all that money.
Yeah.
So
it's, you take the risk with the client.
Yeah.
That's why I always tell my clients.
That conversation, because it's so, in a sense, the medical malpractice area, there's such a gap there between the injured person and the attorney in regards to what, you know, when you're vetting a case and, mm-hmm. and talk about that conversation, whether you're going to take it. Okay. Well, let's go with one you're going to take because, you know, by the way, everybody's experience on the defense side kicks in on you know, it don't take a rocket scientist to understand that insurance companies are likely not going to roll over right on the spot, no matter how obvious it is.
Unless I call them,
Joe. This is Kristen Buttle. What do you want? How much can we give you? Can we get it? I need it by Friday. I got a vacation coming.
Andrea Sasso gave us a headache to death. We just gave her what she wanted.
Seven figures.
I can't.
I don't even
that,
get out
Joe.
Of bed unless for less than 7 days. But.
I think I heard her say that last week.
Never mind.
Oh man, and lady, I don't get out of bed for less than $10,000.
She actually, I heard her say that to an adjuster.
But having said that, talk about that conversation with a client who's calling and you have to, you know, even walk them through the process, say, by the way, this might be a year, maybe 2 year process, no matter what it is. But you're in order to set somebody up for success, because just now you've vetted the case, you probably spent thousands of dollars. You decided you're going to take the case. Now you got to kind of, you know, sit the client down and for real say there's a lot of ebbs and flows. What's that conversation? Because you're trying to get them to set them up for success emotionally.
Yeah, and that's a great question. I think everyone just wants to be spoken to truthfully and wants to hear it, you know, hear the real talk and be spoken to like an equal. I always speak to everyone as if they're a friend or family member, and I don't, you know, I never go by, I mean, some lawyers, I guess, depending on where you are, will go by like Attorney McHale or Mr. McHale. I always say, I'm Kevin, you call me Kevin. Don't you dare refer to me as anything else. You know, we are equals here. We're teammates on this journey. And I try and just, you know, shoot them straight the whole time from the first phone call we have. I say, listen, I'm going to do everything I can to get you as much money as possible. There's a chance you're going to get a lot. There's a chance you won't, but I'm going to be here the whole time with you. And from the very beginning, when we sign a case up, I say, listen, here's the timeline. You know, if we're in Philadelphia, I know exactly, you know, when we file the case, when the defendants are going to be served, when their lawyer is going to get the case, when they're going to, you know, serve discovery, when you can expect your deposition, kind of all that stuff. And I think it's important to kind of keep the client's morale up, because up front you can say, listen, from start to finish, you're looking at 2-3 years maybe. But I think it's important to focus on the little internal checkpoints there. You know, we get the written discovery done. That's a huge thing to get that done, right? I mean, it can be a pain. I think everyone here loves doing written discovery, but at least for the client, it's a box that they can check, right? It's a step that we've completed together. You know, you get to do your deposition. That's huge. And just to kind of celebrate the little victories and the milestones, mm-hmm. we say, listen, the value of your case went up today. You know, good job. I just had that deposition on Saturday. And I said to the client, who I love, she's the best, I said, listen, you still have some time here, but you did really well today. And there's not much you can do for the next 4 or 5 months. But for today, you did a really good job.
You know, I think that's a great way to put it. It's almost like school or you know, it's like, you know, the victories, one at a time. Enjoy, try, try to, you know, to lay out the process. By the way, it's a great way to say it because, you know, with somebody who doesn't know, a client who may not have you know, if they've never been in this type of situation, yeah, they may walk in and like 3 years, the guy at McDonald's spilled a coffee on himself. He's got his.
Oh, don't get me started on that case,
right,
Joe.
Right.
Don't get me angry.
My point is, you know, he got his money and time, but you know, I'm just saying.
Have a huge misconception.
Yeah, right.
Oh, everybody watch Hot Coffee.
But,
documentary.
But my point is you have laying that out to them like that sets them up for success. You're not getting a call 2 weeks from there going, are we close?
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. And I think most people just appreciate the honesty one way or the other. I mean, even if it's news they don't love hearing, you know, I know that, you know, working on contingent fee, I say to the client, listen, your interests align with mine. I want to get paid too. Like, yep. I'm going the same time
you don't get paid until you get paid.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, 3 years for you is 3 years for me too. So I'm doing everything in my power to move it as fast as we can. And I think once, you know, you explain that and you get on board together, it's, you know, it's pretty easy.
Talk about the communication. I mean, this is a great topic to, you know.
Managing expectations is the number one.
But during the process, how do you?
But I really think that in medical malpractice cases specifically, most of the time, almost every family member or person that has been a victim of it, it's not really about the money. Mm-mm. If they need the money, it's because they need to contribute towards their care.
Yeah.
But other than that, these people just want answers about what happened because some doctor spoke in some language to them, which is completely foreign, and they just don't know what happened. And I think that the way I communicate the expectations with them is, look, if there is a mistake, you have a case, we'll go through it. You're going to at least find out what happened. Or we're going to give them a hell of a lot. We're going to really inconvenience them in the meantime, and you're going to get answers, and you're still going to keep it safer for the next person that goes in for that surgery. And on the flip side, and if you don't have a case, they always find calm and peace in knowing that, like, that doctor wasn't trying to kill my mom. She was going to go anyway. And so that is kind of, like, to me, the best part about the communication.
So justice comes in a lot of different forms. One of the things that when we talk about getting a big recovery is that person may have lost a family provider. They, you know, maybe a husband or a wife or a child, or that child needs, health coverage and treatment the rest of their life. And so many different factors will weigh into that. But one of the things, the contingency fee agreement just is a game changer. It allows regular folks, to be able to retain great attorneys like yourselves and not pay a dime out of pocket to retain that education and that experience.
Right.
Okay. And I always look at the way you laid it out and especially with the, you know, talking to the individuals, you know, you could know the law, you could know it all. You know, or whatever. But if you're not a good communicator and you're not you don't have that you know, bedside manner, you know, you're not going to keep your clients. Yeah, but
absolutely.
What you just said, Andrea, was a big point, and that is you're creating a situation where you're trying to get that person through the rest of their life who've dealt with some sort of situation, and they may never be able to work or do that. Their whole life is. And if they and you're going, you're holding their hand for maybe 1, 2, 3 years, but let's see what. Let's talk about what else you're doing. Justice happens and change happens in the courtroom.
Yeah.
So you're not only trying to work hard to help their life, this person in their family for the rest of their life, okay, and to get through those situations, to get their child, treatment or some assistance for the rest of their life, but you're also trying to make sure it doesn't happen to somebody else.
Right, exactly.
How does that feel in what you're doing? Because justice comes in, you know, this individual and also in the courtroom for other people.
So a lot of my clients, that's their number one goal, is a lot of my clients will say, I just don't want this to happen to the next person.
Right, they really do.
They really do. And like even just, you know, a case against like an apartment building because they had a dangerous apartment building. I just don't want it to happen to the next person.
That's big in the equation. Now, people don't want, your thoughts on that?
I mean, I am always so amazed by the spirit of the folks that we deal with. I mean, if something like whatever happens to my clients would have happened to me, I feel like I'd be very punitive in nature and mm-hmm. want to get some sort of revenge or something.
Right.
But a lot of these folks just aren't that way. And they've said, listen, this has happened to me. I can't change it, but I don't want to happen to someone else. And that's so empowering. And in my opinion, it really helps their case. Because if mm-hmm. you're the insurance company, you're looking at this person thinking, and this isn't just about the money. So I can't paint this person as someone who just wants money or someone who's just happy to sue. They really want this not to happen again. And it's a much tougher case for them to defend in trial when someone gets up on the stand and says, not only was this traumatic for me and my family, but I don't want it to happen again. And that's my biggest concern. It's a lot harder to defend that case.
Yeah, 100%.
You talk about settlements when you get down, you go through the whole process. And when do they normally happen? Is it normally when they get close to trial?
Except we're all quiet, Joe, because you know what the answer is? It depends. Every case is different.
The class I would have added in law school, mind reading, magic ball, crystal ball. Like there's no rhyme or reason.
No.
Literally. It depends on how. Sometimes you have a very, very realistic, experienced adjuster that will just want to see you put your plaintiff on and see how they present. And the second they present like that person that Kevin just described, settle the case before right. we spend money. A lot of times on the courthouse steps, a lot of times before litigation, a lot of times a month into litigation.
It really just depends. I mean, some cases are, you know, the higher, I would say, you know, the more maybe complicated, higher level, high profile cases. I mean, well, it depends, but sometimes you have to go almost all the way to trial. Or you're in trial, like you're physically trying the case.
Put on a couple of days of witnesses. Right.
I was going to say, I guess
sometimes you make your closing arguments, and then you settle the case before the jury comes back.
Really?
Yeah, JB yes. and Tyler just did that. I think a couple of weeks, a couple of months ago, they just settled a case while the jury was out.
Yeah,
right.
And so did Kevin.
Does your witnesses really matter, right? I mean, obviously the credibility. Could you imagine that case when Nick Foles came in and it's in Philadelphia?
That was my first thought.
Could you imagine the idiot on the other side, the insurance company that didn't settle that case? I mean, obviously didn't know sports. You know what I mean? Because Nick Foles comes in, he's won the Super Bowl for us. I don't care what the situation is. Give him the money. I'm just saying that. You know that was absolutely nuts.
That was Maragos.
It was Maragos, right?
Now trial. Yeah, I mean that's the other thing though, and I'm sure that everyone here can talk about it. Sometimes we can use their kind of mistakes against them, and people for whatever reason on the defense side or the insurance side will be unreasonable or not see the value of the case, and we try it, and then you know you just put it out, you know, put it all out there, and the jury more often than not sees it and gets it right, and a lot
every
of times,
time. They get it. They know the yeah. issue immediately.
Well, I could just
it's
tell
so
you,
amazing.
Let's just say I own that firm, but I was out of town, right? And I came in and I found out that Nick Foles was their guy. And you didn't settle the case, right? You're fired.
right.
right. yeah, the adjuster did not read the room.
Yeah. Let's do this. We only have 2 minutes. Contact information, name of the firm, and where they can learn more about you.
Yeah, Heumann & Caputo, and my email address is kmchale@heumanncaputo.com, and it's YOUMANCAPUTO. And our phone number is 215-302-1999.
Awesome. Kristen Buttle?
Thanks so much for coming on, Kevin. You were fabulous.
Guys. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Is this your first time, by the way, on the radio?
I did one podcast, never live radio, which is obviously evidence because I put my own chair down about 6 or 7
We did a great job.
It was all downhill from there, brother.
Yeah, right?
All right, everybody go to stamponelaw.com. Check us out.
Andrew Sasso, stamponelaw.com. asasso@stamponelaw.com.
All right, I want to thank
you for listening. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Thanksgiving. Have a great holiday.
Shout out to Tony Shore.
There you go. I want to shout out to Tony Shore for making it happen at Pinnacle Medical Plus. Matt Menark, who's our producer. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Andrea and Kristen Show. We want to thank Kevin McCall of Heumann & Caputo for being here. Also, Kevin, I love what you said about your clients. You want them to call you by your name, but you want the prep. You're calling me Mr. Docky. That's it. Just kidding. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Docherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.